Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Juliette Binoche. Thank you so much for joining us. We're here at the Kennedy Center because she's performing in the play Antigone, which starts tomorrow, Thursday, and runs through Sunday. So very brief time here, so come out and see it. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, before we get into the actual play itself, just talk about just how cool it is to perform here at the Kennedy Center. Is this your first time?
First time in Washington, D.C., and first time here.
Oh, you've never even been in the city before?
Never.
Wow. When did you get into town?
2 days ago.
Really? Mm. All right. What's your first initial impression of it?
A lot of concrete, not enough trees.
They have to drive you through Rock Creek Parkway. There's a little more green space there.
Or
the National, but even the National Malls usually are green space, but it's all dug up now. They're doing renovations to it. Well, welcome to D.C.
Thank you.
Where are you? Do you live in Paris or where do you live?
I live all around the world, but I have a house in Paris, yes.
Okay, cool. Well, welcome to D.C. and welcome to the Kennedy Center. Have you been rehearsing here, I assume? Or
No, we actually are rehearsing in the afternoon and then we're playing tonight.
Okay, but have you gone in and at least seen the spaces and all of that?
Yes, I went to the theater. I had a peek and seeing and feeling the space, how it feels. It's very deep, a very deep theater, so it's... I'm happy we might.
But imagine the depth filled with all these people dressed all nicely. So think about that way. So that's cool. All right, well, Antigone itself, it's a story I think that most people are familiar with. And, you know, I'm trying to remember when I think we might have read the Sophocles thing in high school maybe. It's Greek mythology. Everyone knows about this. When did you first discover it? Do you remember where
it was? I discovered, of course, at school, because I think it's studied everywhere in the world at school. But I really saw it when I was 18 years old. I was in the first row, and it really printed in my mind. And that's why when, with Ivo Vanoff, the director, we thought about plays, we talked about Greek tragedies, and he went more with Medea and Electra. And I stick to Antigone, because I remember it being so strong. And because we didn't have a translation yet, and Ivo was not that keen, he was a little frightened and not knowing what play to use. And then I kind of pushed him to ask Anne Carson, our translator, because she is the most wonderful translator for Greek tragedies. And she said, yeah, so we were very lucky and we started rehearsing last January, and we've been touring the world. We've been to Europe, you know. And
did you have a thing in New York too? Did you?
We played at BAM and North Carolina, Michigan, and now we're ending our tour here after 100 shows. So it's
this is the grand finale.
That's for us. It's symbolically, it's very powerful, and also because the play is political. It's Creon and Antigone is provoking Creon, just not because she wants to provoke him, but because she is doing something unlawful to his eyes. But for her is the principle of life, that you have to bury your people no matter what, whether they're enemies or no enemies. You have to take care of the dark places of your family, of your life. You have to turn to the sort of a feminine side of yourself, you know. I always thought that Antigone was the feminine side of Creon that Creon is refusing. But then when she dies, because Antigone decides to sacrifice herself for this deed, you know, this need of burying her brother, Creon, because of her, will change. He would lose the power, he will lose the possession, he will lose enjoyment, but then maybe find another layer of himself, but be in touch with the invisible, with the first principle of life. So the play, I mean, is so political, also because Creon divides the good from the bad. He is in a political view, he needs to really make it like a structure. And of course, in your life, you need an indication, for example. You need a structure of to be seen or shown or feel what's right and what's wrong. But at a certain time, it's not working anymore like this, because sometimes life breaks all your rules, all the structure, the education you were brought up with, and you find other layers inside of you. And that's really what the play is showing. Antigone is showing, be in touch with the ontologic principles, the invisible, something you forgot, but you have to remember. Antigone means before birth, Antigone, before birth. So she's really the symbol in this beautiful myth of Oedipus. She's the symbol of going back to the principle.
Gotcha. And remind us, in case some of our listeners haven't read it since school like we were, you know, what Antigone is, it's Oedipus's daughter. Is that what it is? I'm trying to remember
Oedipus had four children.
Okay.
And the Ismene, Polyneikes, Eteocles, and Antigone. Okay. And Oedipus married his mother.
Okay, right. The Oedipus complex.
Exactly. And Oedipus was actually rejected by his parents because they went to see the oracle in Delphi, who told them, you will kill your father and marry your mother. And because the parents were so frightened of that possibilities, they put him into the woods, and he was found and raised to another city raised by the king and queen, and was raised by the king and queen. But then somehow Oedipus felt that he was not belonging. He didn't understand where he came from. Who am I? He was asking himself. So he went to see the oracle, who said to him, you will kill your father and marry your mother. So he left the adopted parents. And that's when he met with his father in the little path. And actually, Oedipus means the swollen foot. Mm. And
that's what I have right now.
And actually, when he, in this little path, when the carriage went through, it touched his foot, his swollen foot. And it was his father that was in this carriage, and he killed him. And then he went to Thebes because he's heard that the wife was the widow. Was willing to marry anybody who could answer the Sphinx question, you know. And the Sphinx asked, who in the morning, the same person, who in the morning is on 4 feet, 2 feet in midday, and 3 feet in the evening? And Oedipus answers, the human being. Right. And that's why he marries the queen, who's his mother, but he doesn't know it. So the curse is so big on this family, but Antigone, what she's trying to repair is to go back to that curse and make it, to transform it.
Right.
So how do you make good if it's not from the bad? Yeah. So as Creon is trying to push it away, she is willing to go and take it from the root
to
reverse the situation. And the Sphinx, you know, question about the 4 in the morning, 3 in the 2 in the midday, and 3 in the evening, is actually 4, because we, in the morning when we start our lives, we have this animal nature. We're going through emotions, you know, jealousy, pride,
our
needs, you know, are very kind of raw.
Yeah.
And so it's all our animal side that we have somehow to be aware of, to live, and to transform into the 2, which is the human being. You know, you're becoming less of an animal, but more into reaching actually your spiritual nature, which is on the in the evening. The 3 is actually the Trinity.
Right.
In all traditions, Trinity is the spirit, is the one,
right,
is the spiritual.
Lots of the divine
journey.
Traditions.
Yeah, Trinity.
Yeah.
And you have that in Taoism, you have that in Sufism, you have that in all traditions.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you all this because myths are combining so many layers
of our
unconscious. I love
it. I'm with you. There's 47 layers going on at all times of everything.
Because it's about, it's teaching about our possible transformation. That's why it's fascinating to go back to the myths and the old writers' minds and masters that we have.
Absolutely. And hopefully this will inspire more people to go back and be like, oh, that's why I remember loving that so much. Like, you saw it, you said you were 18 in the first, where did you see it? You were in the front row of a theater?
In Paris, you know. And it's true that also it's a confrontation of the masculine and the feminine. Mm. Antigone is this woman, and she's lost everything. She's a princess, of course, because she's the daughter of Oedipus, who was the king of Thebes, but she's lost everything. Palace, she doesn't belong to anywhere. She said no to the fiancé she was supposed to marry because she decided to go to the deed of, you know, burying her brother. So the feminine side is somehow more fragile, of course, because she's going to be killed. But she's the place of compassion. She's the place of going to the unknown and going to the courage to go through your emotions.
Yeah. Is it going to be, since this is the last, you know, you've been touring with this for a while, since you said 100 play times?
Yes, Saturday night is going to be the 101.
Oh, wow. So since this is the last, you know, go around with it, is it going to be hard as an actress to let the role go?
You know,
is it part of you now?
No, it's part of me, but to give it its power, its intensity, to going back to it, it was difficult, you know, because every night is a challenge. It needs to be at its peak, you know, to be really at its power. So just before plunging into it, sometimes it's very difficult. So I'm happy to go, you know, to move on and go to another thing. But while I'm at it, I'm enjoying it because you reveal the inside of what we're made of.
Right.
And Antigone is going through so many different layers of herself emotionally because, of course, she's saying at the beginning of the play, I will bury my brother no matter what, and if I die, I'll do it no matter what. But while, after saying that and burying and being caught by the guard and confronting Creon and suddenly having to face the cave, it's another story.
Yeah.
She has to descend the whole journey of it and doubting and fearing and getting angry and hoping and feeling that she's in a passage of you know, living the living ones and going to the dead ones. So actually the emotion I'm going through is amazing because it's like, you know, a big circles of that what we go through in a life, you know. But at the end of it, because as an artist, you know, as an actor, there's a relief. Yeah. There's a joy that is coming after that when it was well played. I'm not saying it's every night like this because sometimes the magic is happening and sometimes it's not as, you know, you wish that you were more open or you forgot yourself more or were in touch with your this information that it's called emotions, you know, as actors. But when it happens, it's meaningful.
Absolutely. Well, I know we got to wrap it up, but as a huge movie guy, do you mind ending with a rapid fire of, I'll throw out a director you've worked with and maybe just the first word that comes to your mind from him. Do you want to do that?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Early in your career, Godard, legend.
Faith.
Okay. In Unbearable Lightness of Being, Philip Kaufman, you guys know him from The Right Stuff, but Philip Kaufman.
Joy.
Okay. One of your legendaries, Three Colors Trilogy, Kieslowski. I think I read you maybe even turned down Spielberg's Jurassic Park to go do that instead, and it worked out really well for your career. So, Kieslowski.
Complicity.
Okay. English Patient, Anthony Minghella.
Minghella.
You won the Oscar for this role, so.
Surprise.
Okay. Chocolat, another Oscar nomination.
Yummy.
Yummy. Agreed. One of my all-time favorite directors and movies, Caché, Michael Haneke. I think the guy's brilliant.
Dangerous.
Yeah, true. All right, what's more recent? Oh, Certified Copy. Your big can, yeah.
Deep.
Okay. And since you've come to America here, we'll end on a big blockbuster, Godzilla. We'll end on a light.
Short.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
You're welcome.
You were great. Thank you.